One of the better indicators of environmental health is the health of bird populations and habitats, which is why when environmental groups wanted to demonstrate the health of older forests, they focused on a bird, the northern spotted owl. Many, many birds are featured in the annual State of the Birds report put out by a number of conservation groups and agencies. The Klamath Bird Observatory, based in Ashland, is one of the groups. The State of the Birds 2014 is brand new as of this morning, and several of the Klamath Bird Observatory's people are here to talk to us about it. John Alexander is the executive director of the KBO, joins us by phone. Welcome, John. Or does not welcome, join us by phone. Brandon Breen is in the studio with me, the KBO Science Communications and Outreach person. Hi, Brandon.
Hello.
Good to have you here. Jamie Stevens is the Klamath Bird Observatory Science Director. Thank you for joining us as well, Jamie.
Good morning.
John, have we established contact with you yet? Okay, we don't have John at this point. So, Jamie, why don't you tell us a bit about what the Klamath Bird Observatory is all about?
So at Klamath Bird Observatory, we study birds and their habitats to ensure the sustainability of healthy populations and to reverse the declines of those that are in trouble. So we do a lot of science, and then we share that information with people that can implement conservation on the ground, as well as with the community and the next generation who will essentially become the conservation leaders of tomorrow.
So unlike, for example, the State of the Union address from the president, this is a State of the Birds report that is going to appeal to people who are already mildly interested, at least in conservation efforts.
Yeah, I think the report will be of interest to a wide variety of people. It does a good job of condensing a lot of scientific information into some really simple ideas. And right now there's a big release going on in D.C., and one of the audiences of the report are lawmakers and decision makers at that level as well. But it'll certainly appeal to the general public, too.
Are there actual members of Congress there for the unveiling of the State of the Birds report 2014?
Yeah, there are. Hopefully John will join us and be able to tell us more about that.
And this is the fifth or sixth version of this?
This is the fourth.
The fourth, okay. Did we miss a year in there somewhere?
Yeah, the first report came out in 2009, mm-hmm. and then there were three reports in total. This is the fourth report, and essentially what this report is doing is looking at trends similar to what the 2009 report did.
All right. And tell us about, on the ground, what the Klamath Bird Observatory does locally for folks in the Rogue Valley. You did have a big bird festival this year, didn't you?
Yeah. So the Klamath Bird Observatory, we're involved with a fair amount of community outreach. And we did host our first birding festival at the end of May based in Ashland. And it was really a big success. It was a lot of fun. We had over 120 people who came, and we got some questionnaire results back, and people were very happy with their experiences. And kind of speaking to the incredible diversity of this region, there were over 170 bird species that were seen on the 30-plus field trips.
Is that unusual for any region? Is it unique that there are that many here, or are we sort of average?
You know, I think we're above average in terms of forest bird species diversity, and that has to do with the geologic complexity of this region as the different mountain ranges come together here.
All right. As we talk about the State of the Birds report with Brandon Breen and Jamie Stevens in the studio, and ultimately John Alexander on the phone from the Klamath Bird Observatory, I want to point out that this is actually a pretty attractive document meant for public consumption, Jamie. This is not one of those white and black peer-reviewed scientific sorts of things, but there is a lot of science that went into it, correct?
Exactly. And Brandon was on the communications team that helped make the State of the Birds very digestible. There's lots of pretty pictures in there to make it extra fun to look at.
But, how long, I know we talked about State of the Birds a few guys last year, there's a different emphasis in each year's State of the Birds report, right?
Yeah, there's a different emphasis each year. And like I mentioned earlier, the essence of this report is kind of revisiting what the first report did, just to give us a status of how birds are doing. And then the other reports have looked specifically at how birds relate to federal lands, birds on private lands, and then there was the birds, how birds are relating to climate change report.
John Alexander, I understand you, the executive director of Klamath Bird Observatory, with us now on the phone. Is that right? Or not? I'm not quite sure what's going on with John Alexander and our connection to him. He's in Washington for the announcement. Is that right?
That's correct.
All right. Let's talk about, at 5 years now since the first report, do you guys feel like you have a bigger or at least more comprehensive story to tell through the State of the Birds report?
Yes, I'd say so. It seems, each year the data that we have gets more, just more numerous, and there's more information that we can draw upon. So this State of the Birds report is considered the most comprehensive look at bird populations in our nation ever conducted. It draws from now about almost 50 years of long-term monitoring data.
And I noticed that the page at the end there, and people can see the report online at stateofthebirds.com, .org, stateofthebirds.org, and see the whole report that we're looking at there. But at the end of it, it looks sort of like NASCAR with all the logos from the different agencies and groups involved. So who are some of the other agencies involved?
So the report was produced by the North American Bird Conservation Initiative and a whole large network of partners. And so the partners include federal agencies, a number of nonprofit organizations, and really the partnerships that are represented in this report are the essence of how bird conservation is happening in our country right now. It takes all those different partners to think about how we can do the actions to conserve these birds on our lands.
All right, we'll get into some of the specifics of the report, the State of the Birds report for 2014, coming up on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to Brandon Breen and Jamie Stevens here in the studio, and we have John Alexander on the line. We'll establish that contact soon. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange when we come back from this break. Back on the Exchange with your phone calls and emails in a minute five. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are talking today about the State of the Birds report for 2014, just out this morning, with three members of the team at the Klamath Bird Observatory based in Ashland. John Alexander is the executive director on the phone from Washington. Brandon Breen is KBO's Science Communications and Outreach Officer, and Jamie Stevens is Klamath Bird Observatory's Science Director. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about birds and their habitats and what birds mean for the environment as a whole. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. John Alexander, I apologize. The last time we didn't hear you was my fault, and I believe we actually have established contact with you now.
Hi, Jeffrey. Hey, Jamie and Brandon. It's great to be online with y'all.
Good to have you here. Have you? So, has the report been released? Then, have you had the big press release bash?
Yeah, there was a. We're here at the Smithsonian Castle. The Smithsonian was one of our new partners this year, and their migratory bird scientists as. Serving on the science team, and there was a press release today with the director of the Fish and Wildlife Service and the undersecretary of the Smithsonian. A large crowd here, a lot of the partners involved with the report, as Jamie said, it's quite a partnership endeavor to try to summarize the state of the birds in the United States in 12 pages, and we all work together to do that. So the events are just starting now here in Washington around this. Release of the report.
Jamie did mention just before the break about the North American Bird Conservation Initiative, and you just said Smithsonian, and you said Fish and Wildlife in there too, U.S. Fish and Wildlife?
Yeah, the North American Bird Conservation Initiative is made up of both government and non-government organizations and academics, and it represents all of the different birds in North America, and serves as a body for bringing together the science of bird conservation and interfacing that with the policy of bird conservation. And so this report is produced by the North American Bird Conservation Initiative. So in the development of the report, it includes both non-government organizations like the Klamath Bird Observatory, academic groups like Cornell Laboratory of Ornithology, and then agencies including the Fish and Wildlife Service, the U.S. Geological Survey, many of the natural resource management agencies as well.
All right. I'm sure some people are going to think, well, this is great. They have a State of the Birds report, but there could probably be a state of blank about anything. So Jamie, make the case for us. Birds as indicators. Why should the general public care about the state of the birds?
Well, birds provide really good indicators of the state of our environment. So in addition to thinking about the importance of bird populations in and of themselves, they also provide good indications of good indications of habitat quality and quantity. So because birds respond really quickly to habitat change, they are highly mobile, they have a high metabolic rate. So they respond really quickly to environmental change, and they are often early indicators of what's going on in our systems.
In other words, they're more sensitive to some of the things that get put into our systems that are potentially not good for any creatures?
Yeah, they're sensitive to it. And also we have information about a whole array of species. So when we think about bird conservation, we're thinking about birds that are in all of these different habitat types. And so in a given habitat type, you're going to have a whole suite of birds. And each of those birds is going to be really dependent upon certain characteristics within that system. So if you think about, for example, the suite of birds that inhabit in oak woodland, you have some birds, like the oak titmouse, that require cavities for nesting. The white-breasted nuthatch requires cavities for nesting. And then you have other birds in that system that are really dependent on acorn crops and may come in and out and be more abundant in years of high acorn productivity. And so when you think about what each of these different individual species within a suite of birds needs, you can get a really comprehensive picture of all the different components of a habitat.
Are there some cases within a habitat where you're going to have birds that are somewhat exclusive of each other, in the sense that if certain habitat conditions are good, bird A will be there, but if those habitat conditions are bad, then bird B will be there?
Yeah, and in that system, sometimes it's not necessarily as black and white as good and bad. Absolutely, each individual species is keying into different components of a habitat. And so by understanding whether or not those are in sync with each other, we get a good picture of our overall environmental health.
John Alexander, what was the point that was hammered the most at this morning's presentation, the biggest finding out of the State of the Birds 2014? John? Here we go again.
Yeah, I'm here, Jeffrey. Okay. I would say two things were hammered home. One, in the face of, you know, what are some alarming messages, which are many of the birds associated with important habitats, including western forests, are in decline, we have many examples of how when investments are made in science and investments are made in conservation, that conservation works. And from our perspective with western forests, we, because of the work of the Klamath Bird Observatory and our agency partners and many different partners in the West, have an arsenal of data that we can now use and kind of hone in on some of the issues here and work with the private landowners in Oak Woodlands and our land management agencies to inform the management process and really bring the science to bear. So not only do conservation for the sake of birds, but use this information that we have about birds to help guide more sustainable practices in the way we manage our natural resources. So conservation works, and healthy bird populations mean healthy people, in that we're all dependent on the ecosystems that birds are the bellwethers of the well-being of. And so that's really what people are saying here.
And there certainly is a cautionary tale front and back in the State of the Birds report. Brandon Breen, it's about the passenger pigeon and a 100-year anniversary, and not a particularly happy one. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable story. Or you know, so the passenger pigeon went extinct 100 years ago. It happened, the final bird, Martha, that was housed in the Cincinnati Zoo, died on September 1st. 100 years ago. And the passenger pigeon really is a classic cautionary tale, because this was America's most abundant bird ever. There were, you know, maybe 3 to 5 billion of these individuals of this species. And the fact that this species did go extinct in a rapid time, maybe about 40 or 50 years, the population crashed and was gone. Basically, the message there is that if we're not diligent, if we're not really watching out for the birds, they could slip away from us. And that's kind of the core message there.
I was reading about the passenger pigeon in a New Yorker piece from a few months ago and didn't realize just how abundant it was. The people basically used to whack it out of the sky with oars, because it was that easy to catch them, and they made a pretty good meal. But also that they were so abundant at times that they would break branches, they would drown each other, they would smother each other, because they all tended to hang together in such huge flocks. There was discussions of rivers of birds in the sky, when passenger pigeons went on great migrations, and at least in one case that river lasted for like a day and a half or something?
That's right. Yeah, there's one account from, I believe it's 1860, of a 14-hour flock of estimated to be a billion birds of, you know, can you imagine that? You know, just hanging out outside for 14 hours as just a stream of birds is flowing over you. I mean, it's really kind of astounding. It's almost out of mythology, but it's true, and it happened, you know, not that long ago. So, you know, with the extinction of the passenger pigeon, we're all a little bit more poor for that. And currently in the U.S., as the report notes, there are many birds that are of high conservation concern. It's about 30% of the entire birds in the U.S., according to the State of the Birds watch list. So that's really, you know, it's a time for people to recognize that, you know, things aren't great. But as John Alexander mentioned, you know, the real take-home message from this report is conservation does work. So where there's the will, where there's the commitment, good things are happening for birds.
We are talking about the State of the Birds report for 2014, just released in Washington, D.C., where John Alexander is right now. He's the executive director of the Klamath Bird Observatory. Joins us by phone. Brandon Breen is science communications and outreach officer at the Klamath Bird Observatory. Jamie Stevens is the science director at KBO, and you can join us as we talk about birds and what they mean for the landscape around us. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Jamie Stevens, with the passenger pigeon itself, and granted this is 100 years behind us, so this is not the state of the current birds, but it's a little hard to conceive that something that was that abundant could crash to zero so easily.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting when you think about the different likely causes of its extinction. A lot of the things that happened during that time period really resonate with some of the same messages that are happening today. So the passenger pigeon, one of the things that one of the characteristics is that they're colonial. You mentioned that they are residing in these huge flocks. And so that's one of the things that can make an individual species a bit more at risk. When the entire species is congregating in a very certain area and dependent on a very certain habitat, that makes them a little bit more at risk than, say, a generalist species. So we have that aspect going on. There was habitat loss happening already at that time as well, which is what's resonating with the declines of most of the species that are identified in the State of the Birds. Habitat loss and habitat fragmentation is one of the primary likely causes of declines. But I think most importantly, and Brandon mentioned this already, is that there wasn't really the science behind it at the time. And so we can look at bird declines and bird populations now with a much more clear lens in understanding what's happening with our bird populations and, in a lot of instances, why it's happening. And so we're starting to get a much better handle on that.
Do we have enough of a longitudinal study through time to let us know what perhaps proper levels of these bird populations should be?
Well, the State of the Birds report is based largely on the Breeding Bird Survey, which was established in the mid-1960s. And so that's one of the largest, most comprehensive data sets that we have. There are other long-term data sets that went into this report as well. So we have a pretty good basis of what was happening in that time frame.
John Alexander, there's an interesting statement in the front of the State of the Birds report 2014 in the foreword that says, "We're not trying for Noah's Ark here." I think I get what that means, but could you explain that concept?
One of the themes that we just had a conversation here is that at some points I think we need to pick and choose, and we, as far as our conservation dollars are concerned. And so when we think about the biomes that we talk about and we think about the indicators of western forests, so we think about the indicators of grasslands, it's important that we can find the indicators of the various characteristics that represent resilient ecosystems for birds and people. And so the challenge of making sure that we keep species from going endangered, often it's the Endangered Species Act that helps us do that, that we keep species from becoming listed endangered, so keep them off of the Endangered Species Act, which is an economically beneficial thing for us to do in conservation in general, and then keep common birds common, that's a lot to tackle. And so we really want to take a human and a bird perspective on that and think about what are the most important characteristics to help us maintain healthy natural resources into the future. And one of the ways we know we're doing that is maintaining bird populations into the future as well. So it's a balancing act as opposed to, you know, being able to just bring a few of everything onto the ship and know that it's going to be, they're going to survive, that it's a little more complicated and there's some prioritization that needs to happen in there for both priority and common birds.
And Brandon Breen, you mentioned a watch list, which is not the same thing as the endangered species list, but it looks like it serves a similar function. It's a species to keep an eye on then.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. So so there's two interesting lists included in this State of the Birds report. One is the watch list, and the watch list, you know, is a comprehensive look at over 800 bird species in the USA and to bring it down to the more local level, you know, so thinking about western forests here where we occur, you know, there's species like the rufous hummingbird, the Lewis's woodpecker, olive-sided flycatcher, oak titmouse, wren tit, Caston's finch, evening grosbeak. And these are birds that, like all the birds on the watch list, they're of high conservation concern. And that could be because they have a small range or they have a relatively low population, or they could be, you know, undergoing a fast population decline. So these are birds we need to keep an eye on. And then the second list is common birds in steep decline. And that refers to a number of birds. There's 33 birds in the U.S. on this list. And these are birds that they're not on the watch list, so they're not of super concern like these other 230 species. But they are birds that have lost, you know, in the past 40 or 50 years, more than half of their population sizes. So they're still common, but, you know, they're much less common than they used to be. You know, and one example from this area is the varied thrush, a beautiful kind of typical Pacific Northwest bird.
But that's an interesting point to bring up, is that it's not necessarily the population size at the moment, but how different is that population size from what it was a few years ago? And if it's a lot less than it was, that might be a cause for concern, even though the birds may still seem to be numerous.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the passenger pigeon's the classic case, right? It was still numerous for a long time, but you know, there were troubling signs.
Let us take a call. We have John and Eureka on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about the State of the Birds report with Brandon Breen, Jamie Stevens, and John Alexander. John, go
Hello.
Ahead. Yeah.
This is John.
Yes, go ahead.
I had probably about, it has to be at least 8 years back now. I was talking about the ivory-billed woodpecker that was considered to be extinct. But there were some notable signs down in the Louisiana area that there might still be some around. Can anybody confirm or deny that?
Let's throw that one to Jamie, the science director at Klamath Bird Observatory. Thanks for that, John.
After there were some initial indications and sightings of the ivory-billed woodpecker, there was a large effort made to go and do surveys and essentially really establish whether or not there was a population there. And even with that large effort, there were no more ivory-billed woodpeckers detected over that period. And so, you know, that's one of the species that was certainly, it's one of the species that is... Sorry, where I'm going with that is that, you know, the ivory-billed woodpecker is an example of how resources can be allocated for the Endangered Species Act and for those species that are really on the brink of decline or, you know, possibly already extinct. And so it's important to think about all the different species, and that's one of the things that's in this report as well.
I noticed that. I noticed that the State of the Birds report is not a book of, and it's not a very big document anyway, but it is not a thing about, you know, let us save this bird or this bird. It's all about broader looks at multiple species done by habitat, and that is obviously not accidental. So let's talk about the habitats, because there are there's inland habitats, grasslands, arid lands, forests, and wetlands. Coastal and shorebirds, so oceans, coasts, and islands. Is there any one habitat that is most troubled, John Alexander?
Well, one of the things that Dr. Pete Mara talked about today was Hawaiian island birds, and you know, alarmingly called the Hawaiian Islands the capital of extinction, and all of the birds on the Hawaiian Islands are on the watch list. So that's certainly one of our most alarming messages as far as these different biomes are concerned. Grassland birds and arid land birds are another bird that comes out as a set of birds that come out as some of the ones that are most alarmingly at risk. Though we're seeing some conservation working in grassland birds, and we're seeing that decline there starting to tail off a little bit.
All right, let's pick this up on the other side of a break. We're talking about the State of the Birds Report for 2014 with John Alexander, Brandon Brain, and Jamie Stevens. Back with them from the Klamath Bird Observatory and with your phone calls and emails in 1 minute here on the Jefferson Exchange. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today about the State of the Birds Report for 2014, just released this morning under the aegis of the North American Bird Conservation Initiative, which involves a whole bunch of conservation groups and agencies as well, including the Klamath Bird Observatory based in Ashland, from which we're talking to John Alexander, the executive director, who joins us by phone from Washington. Brandon Breen and Jamie Stevens from the Ashland office are here as well. Jamie is the science director, and Brandon Breen, the science communications and outreach officer. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about birds and their fate in the United States. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. John Alexander, you were just talking about how Hawaii is like the extinction capital of the United States because so many birds in so much trouble in Hawaiian forests. Does this go beyond national boundaries, though? Are there similar versions of the same birds? I mean, are there other populations on islands in the Pacific that are not American islands?
The State of the Birds report is a report of the birds that occur in the United States. I'm a lot of the issues with island species that are plaguing Hawaii are very likely plaguing many of the other Pacific islands as well. And then it certainly goes across boundaries because a very good a good amount of the bird species that we're looking at are migratory and either winter in the United States and breed north in Canada and up into the Arctic, or many of our breeders spend their winters in Mexico, Central, and South America, which is represents, you know, the North American Bird Conservation Initiative has a U.S. committee, but it also is international in scope. And a lot of the work we're doing with Western forest birds, we follow those birds and try to build capacities for science and conservation in Western Mexico, for example, where our birds spend the winter and overlap with birds that we're worried about down there, birds that are endemic, meaning they only occur in small areas and are specialists on the tropical forests that where our birds spend the winter and these other birds spend their entire life.
Let us take a call. We have Ann and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about the State of the Birds 2014.
Thank you. You know, I've been to the Hawaiian Islands a half a dozen times, and I've rarely seen a bird of a native species, except for water birds, under 3,000-foot elevation. And an idea that I've had since the mongoose is a huge predator on bird eggs and young is that for tourists, you know, if you can afford to go to the Hawaiian Islands, when you leave, you can afford to pay $20, $30 to the state of Hawaii, and then that money would be used as a bounty on the mongoose, and the bounty would only be paid to people who actually, you know, live in the state. And I've tried to promote this idea because, after all, you know, bounties wiped out wolves and cougars in a lot of areas and all this sort of thing. So why not have a bounty on this non-native species of mongoose, which is causing a lot of problems for the birds in Hawaii? Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the perspective, Ann. Appreciate that. Jamie Stevens, is the mongoose a major problem in Hawaii, as Ann portrays?
Yeah, there's two major problems that are causing a lot of the declines of the Hawaiian birds. One is predators that aren't native to the island. And the second is malaria. And so part of that is that that is why the native birds are at higher elevations, because that's where those two issues haven't reached yet. And so there are some ongoing programs that are trying to put fences up to keep predators out of those high elevation areas. There is some early indications that Hawaiian birds are, some of the species are adapting to become malaria resistant. That's very early in studies, but there is some indication. Certainly a big concern with climate change is that both of those things are going to move higher in elevation and essentially push those native populations out of the islands entirely. That's a really interesting idea as far as the bounty goes. I know there's some programs like that that are going on in New Zealand. And so I think when we think about revenue for bird conservation, that's definitely a piece of what was mentioned in the report as well, as far as identifying all the work that needs to be done and then how are we going to make that happen. And so what are the communities that can help us make this work happen.
John Alexander, how big, Jamie just touched on climate change, how big a focus is there on climate change in the State of the Birds report? I mean, how big a factor does it appear to be at this point in the success or lack thereof in bird populations maintaining or increasing?
Jeffrey, we did a State of the Birds report on climate change, and we've also done a lot of work in the West on climate change and its impacts. And I think one of the biggest messages with regards to climate change is that we know that climates are changing. There's good evidence that some of what we're seeing is human caused, and we're seeing greater fluctuations in weather patterns. The future's uncertain, but it certainly is certain that it's different than any analog that we have for it. And what that does is it really and heightens the conservation messages. It leverages, it complicates, but it also makes that much more important what we know, which is we need resilient landscapes and that we need ecological processes. We need disturbance, floods, and fire. Those are important things in our ecosystems that maintain our ecosystems. So while we're focusing a lot on climate change, the messaging really is just makes more important a lot of the conservation habit messages, connectivity and habitat integrity and things like that.
You mentioned, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to, I know our time is limited, but, being a national report, one of the things that's exciting about this report is that we're involved as a small organization that works in the Pacific Northwest. And I did want to do a quick shout out to some of our conservation partnerships, mainly because, as you mentioned, it's a 12-page report. And a lot of what we do is try to talk about conservation success stories. And there's two conservation success stories that are talked about in the report. One involves an oak woodland conservation partnership on private land, and Jamie is our lead on that project, and we work with the local group Lomakatse and the Fish and Wildlife Service and the Natural Resources Council and the Bureau of Land Management. And that project and our ability to restore over 6,000 acres on private land is called out in the report. And there's a couple other local examples of where our science and our partnerships with NGOs and the agencies in our region has resulted in informed, important decisions on large landscapes that have benefited birds and the health of the ecosystems. And so I just wanted to, congratulate our partnerships in the state of Jefferson for being relevant enough at a national level that they're being mentioned in this report.
And Jamie, is this the Klamath Siskiyou Oak Network mentioned in the report?
Yeah, the Klamath Siskiyou Oak Network is a partnership that formed recently in the last couple years to conserve oak habitats on private and public lands in southern Oregon and northern California. It's building off of a lot of ongoing work of the partners who have now come together to form that network. And there's already been huge amounts of restoration done on the ground.
I want to make sure we talk about some of the major features of the report, because, again, there's a lot said in here about habitats. Habitats, I would argue, are more important than individual bird species. And for one thing, there's a habitat indicator change graph that shows the changes since the 2009 State of the Birds report, and where wetlands looks like it's increased about 17-18%. Arid lands is the biggest loser in this. What's going on with the arid lands, Brandon Breen?
Well, there's a number of different threats. Development for housing.
Let me stop you there. When we say arid lands, what do we mean? Basically dry parts of the West?
Exactly, yeah. Arid lands basically refers to the West's deserts, sagebrush habitats, and chaparral habitats. And there are a number of threats to that. Energy development's getting pretty big down there, so that's taking a toll as former desert habitat is being used for big energy installations. And just to give them kind of a summary of what's happening with birds in the last 50 years, so basically our inland wetlands are doing the best. They've gone up almost 40% in the past 50 years. And then forests are down 20 to 30%. In the West, we're down 20%, so that's significant.
And then, over 30 years, though.
Over 48 years or
okay.
so.
Okay.
Yep. And then, the arid lands are down like 45%, and the grasslands are down about 40%. So when you're thinking, big picture, how are we doing with habitat conservation in the U.S.? We're generally down, and that has consequences for people.
Well, and in the arid lands, of course, the picture bird there, the poster child, is the sage grouse, which has been declined for listing by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, correct?
So the sage grouse was petitioned for listing, and it was determined to be worthy of listing, but not as worthy as other species. So essentially it was pushed off the list, at least for the time being, because other species were in greater need of being listed. The sage grouse, though, provides a good example of how proactive conservation can also make a really big difference. So one of the things and one of the essences of this report is the importance of conserving habitats and these species that are on the watch list. They're not yet listed. And so right now what's going on in sage grouse habitat is a lot of very proactive work. And there's been some measures put out recently by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for suggested mitigation, and there's a whole large group of resources and partners working on the conservation of that bird, even though it wasn't listed. So it's going to have a step up if and when it becomes listed. But in the meantime, that proactive conservation is an excellent example of what we can be doing.
And again, the other end of the scale where there's a big decline in arid land habitat for birds, there's a big increase in wetland habitat for birds. Now, a few moments ago, John Alexander, when you were talking about how nature needs fires and floods and things like that, do we have more wetlands by accident, or is this more of a deliberate process?
Yeah, it's definitely not by accident. One of the world's model conservation programs is called the North American Waterfowl Management Plan. And we're trying to learn, when we look at all species, especially species that aren't hunted, from the lessons of the Waterfowl Management Plan, which focuses in much part on species that are hunted and ducks. And anybody who hunts buys what's called a duck stamp. And that goes to buy lands for the Fish and Wildlife Service to protect. And the Waterfowl Management Plan also includes a very healthy body of science of what do these migratory waterfowl need through their entire life cycle. And so we have habitats and a conservation system that accounts for birds breeding in the prairie potholes, birds during their migration, and in the wintering ground. And so even birders who aren't hunting should buy a duck stamp. There's more information on our website about that. But one of the things, too, is we need to be careful as well, because we're losing breeding grounds in the prairie potholes of the northern central United States for waterfowl. As we know here, our refuges are in trouble, and there's water issues in our refuges, and some of the refuges that were created under the Waterfowl Management Plan for the protection of these waterfowl during their migrations aren't getting the water that they need, and other things like that. So it's not necessarily a time to slack off, but it's a time to learn that science and conservation, and that example is a fantastic example. We can hunt species, and we can also manage the same species so their populations are on the rise, and that's what's driving that indicator for wetlands. So it's a very exciting story to be able to tell and be a part of.
As wetlands are created, though, is it a if you build it, they will come thing? I mean, do birds always show up, or are there some cases where there's been some engineering to create new habitat and nothing's happened?
you know, we're adaptively, you know, the idea is to adaptively manage. What's neat about the waterfowl management plan is it's not just build it and they will come. It's where are the birds limited in their life cycle? Where does the science say they need it? And let's make sure we target where we build those wetlands where it's going to be most likely to be successful. But certainly any conservation, there's an adaptive approach to it. It doesn't all work the first time around. So we need to keep monitoring and keep learning from our mistakes and keep learning from our successes.
Jamie Stevens, pardon me for continuing with the parallels to the State of the Union address, but every president says the State of our Union is strong and sometimes as a qualifier afterward. But is there an easy way to characterize the state of birds in this report?
Well, I think the essence of what's going on is that we're seeing that a lot of bird populations are in decline, some more so than others, and that we have very clear examples that conservation is working. Where concerted efforts have been put on the ground, we're seeing those trends either stabilize or, in some instances, even increase.
All right. And so, Brandon, bringing this must be a fun thing for you to try to communicate to the public through your job as the outreach coordinator at the Klamath Bird Observatory to teach people that it doesn't take a whole lot of effort to make birds show up and come back.
Yeah. You know, it really is fun talking about birds to people because it is, you know, it has such a universal appeal. You know, whenever I'm on an airplane and I mention what I do, usually, you know, a conversation ensues. So, you know, birds have just so much charisma that it's, you know, it's easy to talk to people about them. And you know, the message that, you know, that I really think about from this report, you know, is that the science is there. You know, when you think back to the passenger pigeon, people just didn't really know what was happening because there wasn't comprehensive monitoring in place. But that exists now. In Klamath Bird Observatory, we host a state-of-the-art data center with a lot of the science. So we're kind of ready to be at the table, ready to, you know, help people make the best decisions for birds. And that includes out in the West, we focus on forest birds. And, you know, more than half of the forest birds are on public lands. So we love working with the BLM and the Forest Service and et cetera.
Find the report at stateofthebirds.org. I want to thank Brandon Breen, Jamie Stevens, and John Alexander from the Klamath Bird Observatory for joining us today. Good to have you all here.